Hi, everybody. Welcome to Mae's Way. Tonight's discussion is going to be about light, and so I've tried to pick out songs tonight that all deal with light in some way or another, and I'm trying to get us to look at light from several different perspectives. What does light do to us? What does it do for us? What are the metaphors that we use for light? What does it mean? So we're going to start out with a particular form of light, hard sun.
Big heart world. Thank you, Mark, and welcome to Emmaus Way. My name is Ben. I'm glad you're here for this evening. We're talking about light. And yeah, I think that's, I can't remember. I wasn't paying attention to what Mark said before he said the song. But I think, I really like that song. I like when Mark plays it. And I think that having a newborn and taking her in and out all the time, like we've been conditioned, if we think about Christian people, light, it's always positive. But man, if you're not used to some light, it can be, yeah, what light reveals, how it takes us, how it confronts us, can be a jarring experience. So, yeah, I thought that was kind of a neat way to start an evening talking about light. I am stalling, I guess. Yeah, okay, so I'm going to stall a little bit. Yeah, well, we can, but I'm going to, yeah, we're waiting for someone to get here, and I'm going to stall for a second. You'll understand in a second. So, yeah, a couple of things. Normally, we go straight into our community song, which we're going to do in just a second. So I'm going to do announcement-type stuff and switch the order around a little bit. And one thing to say, I think most of the folks here might know this, but it's a good thing for you to know if you're checking out our community or here for long-term or whatever, is that we are now going to be moving to a new space. We've gone through sort of a lengthy process over the last year looking for a new space, reality, at ministries growing, changing, we're not going to be able to have our storage. They're needing to grow into their space in ways that will make it a little more challenging for us to be here, and we're excited for them, but we thought we should look around. So we are going to be moving to Calvary United Methodist Church in August. Our last Sunday here, we're planning on being August 13th, and our first Sunday at Calvary on August the 20th. Something to say about that in combination with that move, our leadership team has been mulling the possibility about maybe a time change as well. When we move to Calvary, the possibility of meeting at 4 instead of 5. So, you know, different folks, we've already mulled, like, what's the ideal time? But looking at that one as maybe a small change that could make a big difference for some folks. So there is a survey that's active where you can go and talk about that. I think Wendy, or later, I just talked to her beforehand, and she's going to resend that on the eWay social. But also, if you want to just register your opinion about that, if you're on lead team, raise your hand. So there's several people here in the room that you could talk to tonight to sort of share what you think about that. Always discerning together as a community on those type of decisions, but that's one that we're sort of mulling and probably going to be trying to make a decision about sometime soon. So that's the one announcement I had. What else? Tim?
So, as you guys know, your old timers around here, we have a pub group that has met pretty faithfully for 12 years. It's Thursday night. We meet at the Federal, which is most of you know, on Main Street, around 8:15. Brandon, Anna, several others have been kind of key leaders, Christine, in making that happen. Brandon had a great idea for the summer. This is why I'm mentioning it. A lot of you get the articles. We send out an article every week for that. This summer, we're going to let people in pub group or the community take a week to share something that they love. An article, a piece of writing, something that media, anything that they value as a part of telling their story or a portion of their story or just something that they love. And the reason I'm announcing that is that we will certainly hope that there'll be more people than the pub group regulars that may want to come out for a night, share something that's of value to you, and also notice there may be stories like, I think Brandon, you're on for this week. So am I describing basically the right way it goes? So notice, we'll put it in the weekly, that who's kind of, or try to get something in advance saying so-and-so's telling their story. So please come out. It's a great way to kind of connect socially. Some people are there an hour and a half. Some of us stay till 11:30. It's a good night to kind of hang out. So.
Yeah, that's a great pitch for pub group in the summer. And also just a reminder that there are all sorts of things that we would consider at least as much or more so Emmaus Way as whatever happens here on Sunday night. If you want to know a little bit more about those things, one way you can do that is grab a green card out on that front table. We'll point you to our website, also give you some contacts and basic information about some of the things we're doing missionally, communally, gathering together through the week. There's also a yellow card out there where you can give us your email address, and that will give you a chance to get on some of our listservs and ways that we sort of share information as a community week to week. There's also a metal bowl out there where we always welcome donations to support our community financially. And those are some things that are out front. So I'm going to have Rhody come up and lead the community song. A quick word about it. Rhody sort of came up with this, and it, you know, we're always looking to pair this community song with what we're doing, either the liturgical season or something connected to the series we're doing. And this one seemed, in the way it deals with sort of fundamental elements of physical realities, seemed like a good one to sort of sit with for a while. And Rhody's going to introduce it to us tonight.
Yeah, this song was one of the first songs I ever sang at a wedding when I was 13. The bride really liked it because it had been on One Tree Hill, so that was why it was very important to her. But yeah, I thought we'd learn the first verse tonight, so I thought we'd sing through it twice through. If you know it, please jump in at any point. I'm going to sing it once, and then I thought we would all jump in and sing it together. As the music at the banquet, as the wine before the meal, as the firelight in the night, so
Rhody. And now my stalling is over with. As the kids sort of go on back, I want to mention something that we're hoping to mention in the Brogan's presence, but we will not do that. At some point, I'm presuming the Brogan's will arrive, and when they do, it will be the last time that they'll be here as a family for some good long time. Andy and Anita, a while back, started pursuing and got wind of the opportunity that they could move to Manchester for their current company and spend a couple of years over there as a family working. And they're going to do that, moving, I think, about a month or so. But the kids are actually going to be staying with family elsewhere for a while, and Andy and Anita will be hanging around to sort of close things out with the house and things like that. So if you do see them tonight, and I think you will at some point, just sort of share with them, you know, connect with them. The kids, this will be sort of their last Sunday, particularly for the kids to be here. And also just, it's a chance to note, I mean, I don't know, the Brogans were here when I got here, and I think for a couple of years before, and that was 8 years. So yeah, for a long, long time have been really central and beloved and wonderful members of this community. So yeah, didn't want that to go, they didn't want us to make a big deal about it, apparently not at all. But didn't want that to go without noting it in some way. With that, I'm going to give it back to Mark and Tim. There are no shortage of songs that deal with light. You had a very deep, deep well to draw from this week, I have no doubt.
Yeah, it was easy to come up with songs with light in it. This was like the easiest week of the summer for me. Is my mic feeding back just a tiny bit, maybe? We'll see. We'll see how it goes. So, this is a song by the Smiths that I want to start out with called There's a Light That Never Goes Out. And it could be one that you might have heard before and not really fully paid attention to the lyrics, because the lyrics, you can sing along with this and enjoy it, and then you read the lyrics and it's like, oh man, that's a lot darker than I thought it was. But what I thought was interesting about it and why I really wanted to do it tonight was because, again, as we talk about light, it would be easy to peg this as being like this Gen Xer anthem, and I am a Gen Xer, so it would be easy to peg it as that, this like morose kind of thing. But I think to take it seriously on its own as a work of art, I think is to say, what is Morrissey trying to communicate in these lyrics? That it's called There's a Light That Never Goes Out, but the word light doesn't even appear until the very, very end. And so what is he trying to communicate? What is the idea behind this song, if it seems so sad at times? So we'll see where it takes us. Maybe we'll talk about it a little bit later tonight. The other songs after that also deal with light, but I'll talk about those when we get to them. look and there's people who are young and alive. Driving in your car, I never, never want to go home, 'cause I haven't got one anymore. Take me out tonight, 'cause I want to see people and I want to see life. Driving in your car, oh please don't drop me home, 'cause it's not my home, it's their home, and I'm welcome no more. If a double-decker bus crashes into us, to die by your side is such a heavenly way to die. If a 10-ton truck kills the both of us, to die by your side, well, the pleasure, the privilege is mine. Take me out tonight. Take me anywhere, don't care, don't care, don't care. In the dark and underpass, I thought I got my chances come at last, but then a strange fear gripped me and I just couldn't act. Take me out tonight. Take me anywhere, I don't care, I don't care, I don't care. I'm driving in your car, never, never want to go home, 'cause I haven't got one. Oh, I haven't got one. If a double-decker bus crashes into us, to die by your side is such a heavenly way to die. And if a 10-ton truck kills the both of us, to die by your side, well, the pleasure, the privilege is mine. There is a light and it never goes out. There is a light and it never goes out. There is a light and it never goes out. There is a light and it never goes out. There is a light and it never goes out. There is a light and it never goes out. I look forward to hearing what you guys think that means. This is a song by Bruce Coburn called Closer to the Light. It talks about a different aspect of light. He actually wrote this song after... He wrote it when he heard that another songwriter of mine who I really love, Mark Hurd. Bruce Coburn wrote this after he heard the news that Mark Hurd had just died. And he didn't really know Mark Hurd personally very well, but he knew some of his music. And particularly Mark Hurd's last three albums, which I think are all absolutely fantastic albums, which is Dry Bones Dance, Secondhand, and then Satellite Sky. All three of those albums are wonderful. And he wrote, Mark Hurd wrote all three of those 3 years in a row. They came out, just 1, 2, 3. And I think Bruce Coburn was saying, if I remember correctly from an interview years ago, he said he was on a plane and he listened, it was a long flight, and he listened to all three of those albums back to back to back, and was just really, really touched by what Mark Hurd had written on those albums. And so he went home and wrote this song about Mark. Mm-hmm. there you go, swimming deeper into mystery. Here I remain, only seeing what you used to be. Stared at the ceiling till my ears filled up with tears. Never got to know you, and suddenly you're out of here. You're gone from mystery into mystery. Gone from daylight into night. Another step deeper into darkness. Closer to stillness all around. Death's no stranger, no stranger than the life I've seen. Still I cry, still I beg to get you back again. Gone from mystery to mystery. Gone from daylight. This is a Pierce Pettis song, Envelopes of Light. This to me is just a fascinatingly beautiful portrait of hope. So light as hope. If we've looked at light as punishing and hard sun, this is light as hope in Envelopes of Light.
Right of the past, shut the stream of consciousness to
find its sword. She watches him go, the sentinel behind the Venetian light. Keeps the home fires burning low, like a vestal virgin waiting in the night. Clinging to the highway like a baby to the breath, the distance feeds his urgency and his strangers to the rest. And when he's down so dark, she bails him a little and lopes the light. Cicadas and
Mark and Tim for such thought-provoking set for songs in preparation. I've been on bed rest this past week, and so I knew once I got Mark's always great. So I was like, oh good, Mark's on. So even if the dialogue isn't as stellar, you have fabulous music tonight. So that's great. But we will pass the piece, and at Emmaus Way, if you're new to us, we get up and greet one another. Say hello to someone maybe you haven't seen in a while. Grab some snacks, get some water and coffee, and we'll gather back over here in just a few moments for the dialogue. So it's kind of an odd Sunday to dialogue about light within our alchemy series, kind of physical or metaphorical. But if you think about it, I mean, only 2 days ago, we heard that Philando Castile's murderer was acquitted of all charges. So we were reminded that light struggles to shine in situations of injustice, and the protection of black bodies. And I think it's really hard, or makes it a bit more complicated, to think about light when today we remember how visible light left 9 lives. Cynthia Marie Graham Hurd, Susie Jackson, Ethel Lee Lance, DePayne Middleton Doctor, Clementa C. Pickney, Tywanza Sanders, Daniel Simmons, Sharonda Coleman Singleton, and Myra Thompson, and the Charleston Massacre 2 years ago in the evening. Light is a very physical part of our world that we cannot escape. And yet also, I think light, and I think Mark did a really just stellar job on the songs with this, is a constant reminder of where light seems ever absent. But I'm curious to hear from you all, when you hear light, what do you think? Is it hope and positive? Is it darker, somewhere in between?
I was flipping channels this week. I couldn't sleep. And somewhere in one of the premium channels, the movie Ghost was ending. And I was laughing, like, there's the classic manifestation of light, right? The bad guy dies, and dark spirits emerge, and Patrick Swayze dies, and he's the protagonist, and hope I didn't ruin that very old movie. And all this light streams down, he's visible. And I'm thinking, that's the uncomplicated way that we think about light.
Yeah, for sure, that's a great example. It's been a long time since I've seen Ghost. Others, when you think of light, what do you think?
I'm a night owl, and I'm always daydreaming about, like, sunshine.
Huh.
Like, you know, I have all these, like, daydreams about being out west somewhere in the morning, watching the sunrise or something. Light is a very, like, it's like a thing I'm pursuing, sort of.
Light is something that we pursue that kind of connects to sunshine. Like, does that sort of equate like happiness or a freedom in a sense?
Yeah, so.
Okay. Any last thoughts when you think light? Yeah, Sergey.
I think in simpler times, light was really helpful, kind of like a Thomas Kincaid painting.
Yes, and his like perfect, like, yeah. Or even Bob Ross, how he taught you how to like add the light.
I think now it means something different, just about a revealing of a reality or the way things are, more related to justice.
Light as revealing of reality for the way things are and work toward justice. Thanks. So the physical kind of, I guess, scientific stuff about light in my research, this is what I found. So light is an electromagnetic radiation within a certain portion of the electromagnetic spectrum. I really have no idea what that electromagnetic spectrum is. I just thought it sounded really interesting. And the word, whenever we talk about light, usually refers to visible light, which is visible to the human eye and is responsible for our sense of sight. Invisible light is defined as having the wavelength in the range of 400 to 700 nanometers between infrared, or the longer wavelengths, and ultraviolet light, shorter wavelengths. And the primary properties of visible light are intensity, propagation directions, kind of focusing in, frequency or the wavelength, and polarization. With its speed in a vacuum holding steady at 299,792,458 meters per second. And as we know, the main source of light on Earth is the sun. And the sun provides energy, right? We all took like biology, that provides green plants the nutrients and what they need to form starches, which then releases energy into living things that digest them. And so it is from light that we have pretty much all energy that we need and consume. And like Tim discussed a few weeks ago, another important source of light throughout history for our living has been fire. But as we can tell from being in rooms like this, or really any place, the development of electric lights and power systems has really dimmed, I didn't mean to use that word, has really dimmed our need for firelight. If you start just doing even basic research on light and like science things, everyone agrees that light is one of the most fundamental constants of nature. Even as one of the most fundamental constants of nature, I find it hard to understand light apart from darkness, though. For me, the two exist in a dynamic relationality in both the physical material world as well as within our faith narrative that we proclaim. In Cloud of the Impossible, Negative Theology and Planetary Entanglement, I love that title, process theologian and Catherine Keller, who I talk about a lot, says this: "Nothing is known outside of relation, whether of terror, tedium, or love. Nothing knowable comes known outside of context. If something is known at all, it cannot be absolved of relation. Therefore, nothing is known absolutely. Not God, not me, not you, not truth, not justice, not earth, not flesh, not photon. Each is what it is only in relation to others. To know another is to participate in the construction of that other with the mirror of shared context. But both are still happening in and through each other. One context shades into the next and the next. In truth and in uncertainty, the whole earth might come tangled in every local relation." Or, as Barbara Brown Taylor puts it, in Learning to Walk in the Dark, "There is a light that shines in the darkness, which is only visible there." So what are we to learn about light, this fundamental constant of nature, within our faith narrative, especially when light cannot necessarily be separated from darkness itself? Would someone read Genesis 1 through 5, and then another person read John 8:12 for us really quickly?
"In the beginning, when God created the heavens and the earth was almost void, and darkness covered the face of the deep, while a wind from God swept over the face of the waters. Then God said, 'Let there be light,' and there was light. And God saw that the light was good, and God separated the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night, and there was evening, and there was morning, the first day."
And John 8.
"Again, Jesus spoke to them, saying, 'I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life.'"
So, first, I'm curious, what strikes you about light within this Genesis text?
I've always wondered what it was referring to, because he creates the sun and the stars and the moon later.
Mm-hmm.
So the like creation science people sometimes use this to talk about the Big Bang or creation of matter and energy. Mm-hmm. But, you know, this is an ancient text based on a Babylonian creation, and so I have no idea what this means.
Yeah. What light exactly are we talking about here? Yeah. No, that makes sense. That's a good... Yeah, I'm not totally sure I know what it means either. I think that's good. What light is this that is coming out of darkness, out of formless void?
Great.
I think the formless thing is interesting, because mm-hmm. because absent light, how do you identify form?
Huh. I've never thought about that. That it was naming formless void.
Yeah. you got pretty limited capability to feel form.
Yeah. So maybe there was already, I don't know, light. Or at least a shadow, something that was in shadow. Any others? What strikes you about light in this passage?
This is really simple, but it's the very first thing made, right? Nothing else existed before it or without it.
Yeah. So it must be important, right? If it's the first thing, for sure. I think that I find it interesting, this text in Genesis 1, is that God and God's creation throughout this entire narrative, but especially starting with verse 1, is that it shows that we are God and God's creation are bound together in distinctive and delicate ways. And because throughout this, if you see in 3, it says said, and then if you see in 5, it's called. And in the Hebrew, it means speaking. So it's like God is intimately speaking to this formless void, sort of asking or telling, depending on who you read. Some say ask, some say telling God in relationship to create and to become this light in the world. And that this relationality of light, that that was the first thing that God wanted to be in relationship with, is not an abstract statement on the origin of the universe, but rather it's a theological and pastoral statement addressed to a people trying to make sense of God or the lack thereof in the 6th century Babylon. And so some scholars say that this light, it was sort of like God ever present and intimate in all things, and especially the fundamental constant of our world. But I'm curious, in John 8, so we have this Genesis text, and then we have Jesus, kind of big deal, saying that he is the light of the world. So in many ways, that's another theological and pastoral statement addressed to a people trying to figure out this whole God thing. So how does the language of light of the world strike you? Do you see it connecting to the fundamental constant of nature or not? You can talk about any part of that verse, but...
Well, Genesis 1 is using light to order the world, day, night, darkness, and setting up structure based around light. It seems like Jesus is reordering the world based on light. I am the light of the world. Well, the world already has light. See Genesis 1. So, yeah, it's some sort of reordering that.
Reordering through Christ, yeah. Light is all through the entire Gospel of John. Like, it is... that metaphor and image runs deep. So I do think that it is a reordering. Any others? Yeah, Sarah Kate.
Maybe a different twist on that, since this is from John, so which starts at the beginning, mm-hmm. was the Word, and the Word was God. Mm-hmm. And then light is the first thing to come.
Yeah.
And there's sort of a sequence like that.
A connection. Yeah. So true. Any other thoughts on light?
What if the light of the world is not the visible spectrum, but it's like if you've ever seen something in like an infrared camera, like mm-hmm. the world looks different in mm-hmm. the non-visible spectrum. I'd like to think that this kind of like light of the world is a very different sort of, you know, it does not live in the visible spectrum.
So this is really interesting. So Gail O'Day is a Johannine scholar. She has this entire argument and article. So in the Passion narrative of John, I'm like kind of geeking out, but in John 18, so whenever the guards are coming to get Jesus, there's this description that they bring lanterns and torches of light to come take the light of the world to be killed. And so Gail O'Day and other scholars, I don't think she's the first one, but that's who I learned under, does this entire thing of how we have our understanding of what the light of the world is stuck to, right? This visible spectrum of light, or how we understand light, when really it's a completely different power and kind of in this completely other, yeah, like infrared light, or in this manifest in ways that we can't even comprehend. And so if, in all actuality, we're doing a disservice to the light of the world when we try to think that it is necessarily on the same playing field as visible light.
Yeah, I had a really interesting meeting this week with someone who's making a solar panel that works at night. It's a solar panel that can run on infrared spectrum. You know, it won't generate very much electricity, but you know, it's like it what?
Yeah. It's kind of crazy. Yeah, that is sort of thinking outside. Light of the world is perhaps an ordering that causes us to think outside the box of how we understand. So I wonder, what if we were to lean into light, as Frederick Buechner put it? We can't see light itself. We can only see what light lights up. Like the little circle of night where the candle flickers, a sheen of mahogany, a wine glass, a face leaning toward us out of the shadows. When Jesus says that he is the light of the world, maybe something like that is part of what he is saying. He himself is beyond our seeing, but in the darkness where we stand, we see, thanks to him, something of the path that stretches out from the door, something of whatever it is that keeps us trying more or less to follow the path, even when we can hardly believe that it goes anywhere worth going, or that we have what it takes to go there. Something of whoever it is that every once in a while seems to lean toward us out of the shadows. I recently read a really fascinating article called A Light for Science and Cooperation in the Middle East. Did anybody read this the week of May 8th in the New York Times? No, you should. But it both literally, I think, and metaphorically, like, leans us out of the shadows. So here's the premise, but go back and read this article. Basically, there's a group of researchers called Sesame, made up of physicists from several countries that rarely talk to one another. They come from Cyprus, Egypt, Iran, Israel, Jordan, Palestine, Turkey, and Pakistan. The organization is modeled on CERN, the European research entity founded post-World War II. And so these physicists are choosing to set aside centuries of darkness rooted in conflict to collaborate together with light, literally, like literal light, using a particle accelerator to make particles, as they call it, dance and emit powerful beams of radiation, so-called synchrotron light, I believe I said that correctly, that can be used to study the properties of materials, ranging from exotic semiconductors to viruses. The driving force of this project is Dr. Rabinowitzi, an Israeli theoretical string theorist whose intellectual work is not enhanced or advanced by this project. Because of that reality, because he really has no gain within his field to be doing this, he was asked, why is he even spending time on this light project? He explained, I must say that personally, I always wanted to visit some of these other universes that string theory predicts, just to see how things were there. He went on to say, with the Sesame Project, I actually got to live in a universe where Arabs, Israelis, Iranians, Pakistanis work together for the same cause for their own people, for humanity. And that definitely feels good. It is too grandiose, he said, to call Sesame a beacon of hope. But we have shown a way. For me, that kind of gets at how light, I mean, yes, in this situation, literal light, was bringing people together. But what might happen if we think of and understand light, even understand light of world, as reordering, creating possibility out of darkness that we don't even think is possible? But if I'm being honest, it was a bit hard to think about a dialogue on light this week. Like I mentioned at the beginning, it's hard to think of the fundamental nature, energy, life-giving force of light, when it seems that light falls more sweetly on some than others due to systems of injustice. And personally, it was just a bit ironic to try to dialogue on light this week. Because as many of you know, I have been dealing with systemic lupus erythematosus, I still can't say that last word, for 20 months. And one of the triggers of the disease is light. Sunlight, fluorescent light, any kind of light. And so I've been rocking hats and sunscreen these past 20 months. And to try to stop the light from kind of kicking my body into overdrive to attack itself. I'm trying to stop that. But two Fridays ago, I went on a walk with a big hat and sunscreen, and I had on my long pants, and I had on a rash guard. Yes, I do get to rock rash guards now, like the little kids of Emmaus Way. And I thought I was okay. And then I went and I worked on my sermon, my dialogue for last week on a screened-in porch, and I thought I'd done a good job of still having my sunscreen on and was decently shielded from the light. But out of nowhere, my body just started to go into a major flare and just started to shut down. Like I couldn't move, my hands got swollen, I had a fever. Like it was just shut down almost instantaneously from being in part exposed to the light. And so this past week, I've been on multiple days of bed rest, into my multiple doctor's appointments, and I'm sitting in both physical and emotional darkness because of light, this fundamental constant that I can't get away from that continues to wreak havoc on my body. And so because of lupus, and in part because of light, in 2 to 3 weeks I'll begin to receive an infusion therapy, so kind of I'm getting to go get IVs stuck in me, and sort of I'm getting this special chemo for lupus. It's kind of the most simplistic way to put it, called Benlysta. And so I'll initially go every 2 weeks for the first little good bit, and then I'll go every 4 weeks indefinitely, hopefully not for life, but potentially. And if I'm being completely honest, I really blame light for this last flare. Because it's summer, I've been out in the sun more, I've been trying to do my right thing, and so light as destructive force, whenever I think of it on a spectrum, right, a visible light, feels very, very real. And because of the light, I feel like I'm in this really deep place of darkness. And so I think that I'm so drawn to this tension, to the relationality of light and darkness, and how the relationality might allow me in some way, even in darkness, to reclaim the challenging parts of light, both physical, visible light, as well as emotional, faith-filled, metaphorical light. And so in many ways, I think that I find comfort that our faith narrative begins in darkness. There's something for me that light was created out of formless void in darkness. And I find hope that it is out of darkness we may see and know light and know God in ways we never could have imagined in the fullness of light. If we had only known light, could we fully understand God or darkness? I'm finding peace, however small, in the understanding that though light is a fundamental constant, in all its remarkable and yet dangerous ways, there is another fundamental constant, I think. God in relation to us as light of the world. And that light of the world, God in relation to us, even in our darkest hours, in our shadows, perhaps offers a reconfiguring that we can't even imagine until maybe we're even in that darkness. But somehow, some way, we work on a literal light project with people we are supposed to hate. And I think that God is light of the world. Somehow allows God to illumine new possibility. In the same way that physical light is fundamental constant, forever shapes and changes us. So, yeah, I don't know. I think in some ways I'm not going with the physical fundamental constant, which is like, Ben's probably upset because you're supposed to like talk about the physical implications of light. Like physical of alchemy this summer and like not go metaphorical. And I was like, well, oh well. But there's something really liberating to me right now to think that the light of the world can be off the visible spectrum as we understand light and can move and be and have its being in places and in ways that we can't even fathom. But we know that it's there because sometimes we see a shadow and that's it. But I want to hear from you. What does this mean for us? Light. Light in relationship with darkness. Light is fundamental constant or light of the world? What are we to learn from light as people of God?
Your statement about at least part of God existing in the part of the spectrum that we cannot see. I have this way of thinking that of justifying to myself or recounting to myself why I believe what I do. Mm. And I imagine it as layers of belief. And the most fundamental belief is that all that we see is not all that there is. And you know, there are many layers, several layers that go beyond that I'm not going to describe. But that thought that there is much that we know even through physics that we don't see, that is there, that's very real, and it's actually measurable. My belief goes beyond that. Even I might even say all that we can measure is not all that there is. That's one of my most fundamental beliefs.
That God is present in light even when we can't see it. Thanks. Others, what does this say about light? What are we to think about light? God.
I'm trying to put it together, but the image that's coming to mind, especially hearing you talk, is of the TV show Better Call Saul. Huh. I don't know if anyone else has watched that. Ben's with me here. but the fundamental dynamic there is a Cain and Abel story of two brothers who are both lawyers, and one has done everything the right way, and one has done everything the wrong way. And the one who's done everything the right way, the Cain figure, I think, is plagued by a disease, and it's unclear whether it's physical or psychosomatic or some combination. But the disease is deep pain caused by light or by electricity. And so he constantly lives in a house of darkness and has to have all the electricity pulled from the house. And there are all sorts of rituals everyone has to go through to make sure that he never comes in contact with with really electricity, but manifested in light in a lot of the scenes throughout the, you know, the lights always have to be turned out in every room that he goes into. But deeper than that, I think, is he's plagued by the fact that his brother, who is a trickster and has gotten by on his wit and not necessarily doing things the right way, no one else sees it. It's never brought into the light, right? He sees that his brother's a fraud, but no one else sees it. And so, I mean, I guess what's being brought to mind with this conversation is light causes deep, can cause deep fear if you're trying to hide something, and can cause deep pain if you, if it enters into your life and strikes you. But it can also, it also is a source of, it's a hope there too, right? Because you're hopeful. If, and I just think of our own children, and there's one that's a trickster and never seems to do things the right way. And one who's a rule-abiding sort of law and order person who's driven crazy by it. And she would just wish that light would show.
Yeah, would reveal. Would reveal the truth. Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. I think I sent Ben to, like, I really hate coming up with dialogue titles, but one was light and tension, and so kind of how, and I think Mark really has been getting at that, of all the different complexities and layers and tensions of light, and at times, yeah, how we want it to do things or function in ways that it may not necessarily be doing. Yeah, thanks. Any last thoughts on light?
I was thinking about location in light. My sister and her husband and my nephew are moving to Alaska, where light in time of day is, it's kind of very drastically, you know, throughout the year. If you keep going, you know, for the north, you reach spots where there are moments where darkness doesn't truly exist the way we know darkness here. And that sounds horrible to me.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if I want 24 hours of sunlight in a physical sense. So I've always struggled with this, just this concept of there being no darkness, because I almost want darkness at times to settle myself back and forth.
Yeah.
So I think kind of back with it, there's times where I want light, and there's times that I almost don't want it around me.
Yeah.
But I think it's just that difference of being able to see things in the absence of each other.
Yeah, that's true. And like the, in many ways, I think it's like the rhythm of light and dark, right? And how, I think we're functioned to understand and need both. And so what happens when there's not physical light, but also what does it mean when Jesus says, you'll never know darkness? And how might that, to bring, you know, be completely off, beyond our understanding, because the light of the world is incomprehensible in some ways. Anyway, on that note, I will bring up Mark and Tim to finish light.
Yeah, when I mentioned to Katrina last night, we were talking about, later on last night, we were talking about what we would be discussing tonight. And her first sort of question to me was like, oh, is the art for the night only going to be music, or is there going to be photography too? And I hadn't even thought about how, I mean, that's, photography is art of light. I mean, it's taking what, it's taking a, you know, a film or a sensor, and it's letting a certain amount of light in for a certain length of time, so that images can be revealed. And the way that you manipulate light, the way you light a subject, the way that you, you know, the focal length you use on a lens, or how what the aperture is, how much light you're letting in, all those things affect the way the image turns out really dramatically. And it's all about light. It's all about, where is light in the picture? Where is there shadow? Interesting stuff. I hope these songs of Confession and Absolution, they're going to be talking about light more in the sense of light being a good thing rather than light being a punishing thing. though I am very sensitive to the idea that of hating summer and hating the light that is present in the summer. I had to do hard sun at the beginning because when we lived in Samoa, it was like that. The sun was just punishing and was always there, and you could not, you just didn't seem like you could get away from it sometimes. But these two songs have to do with light being a wonderful revelation.
There's a light. So it's interesting. One quick comment tonight on our worship, music and dialogue, your voices and Molly's, is I was sitting there thinking, we really got today into the space that I wasn't here last week, and so I only have my dialogues to compare to, but we really got into the space that I think we imagined when we were planning this. And this comes from somebody who is utterly committed to ideas. I am as ideological as any human on earth. My commitment to life often comes from ideas. And today, as I was listening, I was thinking, wow, what we're thinking about is that understanding and interacting in the physical world literally reorients any kind of life that's searching for meaning or hope or faith. It's the understanding the world around us, the things that impact our senses, complicates things, but it also drives us to new understandings that stand apart from ideas. So I think we were today beautifully in the space that I think we hoped we would get to. I also was reacting to dialogue, and there's several things many of you said, Molly and others. I'm like, I'm going to think about that for a while. There's practically no hope for me to put my arms around this and say, here's an arm around it comment. But I did have three kind of staccato things that might drive us to the table related to light and darkness. One is, for me, the way that I think I finally learned to pray in a way that was meaningful to me was through Jesuit spirituality and Jesuit prayer, which is very sensory driven. And it's interesting when you read some of the old Jesuits, they always talk about the presence and the potential of darkness in prayer. And so when they guide you into these contemplative experiences, there's often warnings of the presence of darkness in what some might call this light-driven operation. So even stretching out to hear God's voice, and that's the presupposition of that kind of prayer, is that God is speaking, there is there's conflict, there's tumult, there's experiences that don't order comfortably in prayer. That was one thing that came to me. I also was thinking, I wish Stephen Colbert was here tonight, because we could truly geek out on a J.R.R. Tolkien analogy to tonight. Those of you who are nerdy like me and have read and read and read, if you remember the creation story in, I think it's the Silmarillion, that talks about the kind of the beginning of the created world, it's interesting that the world is created not in the ways that we might imagine, but it's created in song, and it's created in darkness. And there's this beautiful light, the stars, but they are a distant light. And what makes them beautiful is that they never overwhelm the darkness. So there's always these projects to create light, but it's never an intrusive, overwhelming light. It's always light balanced by darkness. And just thinking about that, and certainly kind of the theology that Tolkien puts ahead, it causes me to rethink the presence of God in the world. And you know, again, nerding on that, that was probably the text I read in high school where I thought, maybe I've got death wrong, that death is being portrayed as a welcome friend, not an enemy in this text. And so I was sitting there listening to Molly and going, yeah, that, there's this sense that darkness is far more complicated in its relationship with light. And then kind of getting back to really where we were today is not just the constancy of light, but I was really struck by the contextuality of light, is that light in its complexity is always driving us into some form of textured, contextual relationship. And even as we get to John 8, Jesus' presence in the world is always mystery. It's never fully explained. We never totally get it. But what we do get many times is Jesus' assumption that the whole world has changed by that presence, that life and relationship has a whole different set of realities and potential meanings. More is known, more can be done. And we strike back to the words that we use often in this community of Jesus reorienting relationship, that who is my mother and who's my brother and all of those things. It's not these bloodlines, but it's the people who do the will of God. There's a different way of relating in some ways. And as we sit and walk and gather and hug and embrace each other in the table, one of the things that we're very aware of is that we're sitting in mystery. We are not experts about what happens at the table. We're not experts about the presence of Christ at this table. It may come to us as darkness. It may come to us as light. It may come to us in the contextual presence of both of them operating together. But what we do know is that in our eating and drinking, our breaking bread, pouring wine or juice for each other, we are living into a different set of relationships that says that there's more to what's in this room than just a certain number of bodies. There's more to our relationships other than friendships and people who've known each other for a year, a month, 10 years, 15 years. There's more to it than that. And there's something incredibly hopeful, even in something that we don't understand, that we feel like we're forging something. We're forging something that's different, something that is meaningful. So to me, it was powerful for me to sit into realities that I've not thought about tonight, but realizing that there's more there to more than what, I hate to say the analogy, what meets the eye, so to speak. And that's the reality of the table. So I invite you now to the table to embrace each other, to greet each other, to listen in story or in jest, and to be the people of God and to receive the presence of God in this community, in this world, and in our expectations. Join us at the table.